My name's James Beatty.
And I'm Sean Carroll.
And welcome to the Rebuild Health and Fitness podcast, where we help you build your health and fitness. All right, and welcome back to the Rebuild Health and Fitness podcast. And today we have on Kate Gordon. I'll be honest, Kate, when I usually do an opening, you know, monologue just to tell the person, tell everyone about the person, yours would be like about 9 pages. So I've had to try and figure out
just go through it in bullet point format.
What is it? So this is what I've got. So you may know you've got some popularity now. So through CrossFit, obviously you've completed at the CrossFit Games twice. Part of the level 1 coaching staff, social media, where you're sort of taking the world by storm at the moment. You may see on your other Instagram where you're holding a sign up saying some very hard truths, which is a phenomenal page, by the way. Podcast host, nutrition host. Obviously, you've got a nutrition company. There's so much more, and I really want to get into this. You're a very interesting person. That's why we were very excited to get you on. But let's start with you. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself? Sort of, where did you grow up, and how did you get into the industry?
Yeah, so I'm actually from New Zealand originally. I spent most of my childhood in New Zealand, and then for university, I ended up going over to the US and spent a fairly good amount of time there. So I have like that weird hybrid mutt of an accent, which everyone's always like, "Where are you from?" I'm like, "I don't even know."
Yeah, there's like a little bit of a you can definitely hear some words a bit Kiwi,
it's confusing.
American.
Yeah, it's very confusing. Some people are like, "Are you Scottish? Boston?" I don't know. So it's Kiwi blended with a bit of US blended with a little Australian now. So I actually started CrossFit when I was in New Zealand, and it was as simple as I'd been getting into some training just because I was like, I was at the back end of my degree. And as I think people know, you tend to gain a little bit of weight through university. So I'd gotten into training and just had seen like CrossFit online and found a local affiliate. They had like a deal for like, you know, it was like unlimited classes for a month for like $30. And I was like, All right, I'll try it. I think I went once and I was like, it's not for me. Like, no. And they were so nice. Like, they were just so damn nice that I just was a total pushover and was like, okay, sign me up for 6 months. And then the rest is history, really. Like, it took about 3 months to get past that initial phase of like, I don't know what the fuck we're doing. Like, I don't know what the words are. Can someone explain to me what a snatch is? But I think once you get to that 3 month point, you start to see the progress and just start to gain a bit of strength and learn some skills. And that was when it really took off. So, yeah. And that was in 2011. Yeah.
So you were a very early adopter here.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a big wave of people going through around that time, like 2011 to 2013. There was a huge intake, just an influx of people getting into CrossFit. It was really big. It was that new kind of kid on the block. It was really trendy. Everyone was like, it's just a fad. And it's kind of hung around. Like, it's definitely, in terms of like the interest and the intake, like, it's kind of settled now. Like, it's not as high, and you can even see that reflected in the number of attendees that we have at seminars. But I just kind of came in with that wave in the early 2010s, I guess.
Mm. And were you always sort of like a physically active person prior to starting CrossFit?
Yeah, look, I was active just in general, but I didn't play any sports. My sport was dance. Like, I really loved dance, but I spent my entire childhood like behind a boat or on a mountain skiing. Yeah. So that was just like, it was kind of just part of life, right? Like, I was just active inherently. And I'd done a little bit of martial arts and gymnastics in primary school and high school, like just a little bit here and there. But I think I was the kind of kid that if I complained and didn't want to do something, my parents were like, okay, you don't have to do it then. And so I just never really stuck anything out. And, I'll curse my parents till the end of my day about that. I'm always like, why didn't you make me keep going? But I think it took me figuring out that like it was really important to me, and I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the process, and I liked seeing what happened with my body. And eventually got into it.
I think that's important though, because we're both parents, and there's this fine line now between pushing your kids like what I want to do in my head and then having this sort of relaxed thing to say like, hey, do whatever you want to do, because you can't necessarily teach what you have now. You can't, if you were pushed from an early age, you can't teach that sort of resilience, that hard work, that and that competitiveness, that that's like just purely inside. So obviously you spoke about uni. What did you study at university?
Totally unrelated to what I do now. I studied film.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I started, I was into dance. So I wanted to do dance, and the university that I went to at the time didn't offer a major in dance. So I had to major in performing arts with a minor in dance. And then I snapped my ACL one season skiing, and that turned into a film degree with a minor in performing arts because I stopped dancing for a year. And that was actually kind of like, long story short, I ended up seeing a trainer. I got into like fitness, and that was probably the thing that pointed me down the path of like getting into training and eventually finding CrossFit.
So tell us a little bit about yourself before CrossFit. I know we're touching on it now. We saw a good Instagram post where you had obviously your body and your body image pre-CrossFit, say, where you said like you were binge drinking a little bit and you maybe was unhealthy, you perceived as unhealthy here. And then you had a stage where you started CrossFit and got to a place where you were fairly lean that you thought you were also unhealthy. So just running about like how your perception has changed over the time, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally. As you jump through it, especially with in regards to like your training and nutrition and then your body image really as well.
I had no real interest in training aside from how it would change the way that I looked. So in my late teens, early like 20s, I'd gotten into training to just purely lose weight. And prior to that, like, and it's not atypical for females or males really. It was like, I wanted to diet to lose weight because that's simply what it was almost like you just, that's what you think you have to do.
It still is now, really.
It's like, I think I was 14 when I did my first diet, which I believe was like, I'm just not going to eat for a day and then I'll eat the following day. So it was like alternating days of eating and not eating. And I could never stick to it because it was obviously really restrictive and like nonsensical, you know. It was like, I don't even know where I got the idea from, but I think you're surrounded by media and magazines and MTV and MTV and movies. And it was like, it just seemed like the information was if you need to improve yourself, you need to do that by losing weight. And so I think any insecurities that I was experiencing in my mid teens always came out as, oh, if I fix my body, I'll feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what happened. It's not necessarily that I really hated my body and I felt really like I didn't lack confidence and I didn't lack security. It's that if I experienced discomfort or anything that came up with friends or just being a fucking teenager, yeah. I was like, oh, well, the problem is probably I need to lose weight and I can't do that. And I'm failing at that.
Yeah.
So those were kind of my early experiences. I started seeing, I saw a trainer for a little bit and started doing like food journals and things like that. And that was through uni as well. And it was like this kind of weird pattern of, I would be super restrictive and write down my food and stick to it for like a week or two. And then it was just like too hard to stick to. And I would swing the other way and I would just binge and go on these like week long, like epic, like calorie consumption galore. And that just became a really hard pattern of behavior to break. And I think once I started CrossFit and started to perhaps not worry so much about how I looked and losing weight and worry more about like, hey, how am I performing and what's going to make me recover better? It was kind of an amazing like 180 for my brain. It was like, I'm kind of looking at the same things in terms of food and my body, but it was like a completely new perspective that I just never had before.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I think it's funny. You know, you said that you had these diets where you wouldn't eat for a day and you'd like starve yourself and then eat loads the next day. And now we call that fasting and it's a massive trend.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just wild what you want to call stuff. But again, we see it constantly. Like people will, whatever you restrict to some extent, you will overconsume. If you restrict, even like you look at the research around energy balance, what we used to be very big on about like, hey, going on the weekend, make sure you don't take your calories down to allow for the weekend. But then over time, you start to realize through experience that doesn't really work either too well, unless they're only, you know, just coming under, not fucking starving themselves through the week or really restricting and punishing themselves to have a massive blowout just to find some consistency.
Yeah, it's hard. I think it's things like cheat days, right? Where it's like, oh, I'm going to have a cheat day. So I'm going to be really, really good all the other days. And it's like, you only end up having the cheat day because you were so damn restrictive all the other days of the week. Like,
it's just terrible. Even like the language as well. I mean, looking back at it retrospectively now, and you said, you know, you started dieting young, but then even going through university, I obviously went through uni. I did not gain weight. I'd lost a hell of a lot. I turned into like skin and bones because I just drank my way through. But I suppose looking back, reflection, it's like, why are people dieting when they're going through this university and this amazing time of their life? Like, why is it's hard. It's a harder scope to get around. It's a little bit crazy looking back.
Did you find that as you were delving deep into the CrossFit world that you had to play around with the zone and paleo diet as well?
Yeah. And you know what? Paleo was a word that it took me a really long time to figure out. I'm pretty sure I said paleo for like a couple of years. So I did paleo, which was really basically me eating nuts and dried fruit for like a few weeks. But I did figure out that there was something to quality of food.
Yeah.
And that suddenly was like, oh, okay. So there's different qualities of food, and there's foods that are refined, and there are foods that you find in the aisles of the supermarket, and the perimeter of the supermarket is actually different. And there's stuff that comes from a factory and stuff that we would find in nature essentially. So that was, it kind of prompted me to understand. And I think I probably took it too far and it became good and bad food. But yeah, it definitely started to introduce me, or was a beginning of an education around food.
Obviously, you're quite an accomplished athlete. You've achieved a lot and you've been in the game for a long time. But obviously, when you're playing around with like a zone diet and paleo diet, it is naturally quite a restrictive way to approach things. Was there a stage in your training where, you know, I'm sure you would have been making progress, getting stronger, getting fitter, being able to perform at these higher intensities, but was there a certain point where you just noticed things starting to break down, or you not feeling as well as you should?
I definitely did notice that, but that came a lot later. Initially, when I was doing things like paleo and cutting out particular food groups, that was far too early in my journey to understand how it was impacting me and my performance, and being able to even observe some of those differences. Like, you know, when you first make changes, it's like beginner's gains. It's that effect of like you make a small change and it's very impactful on your entire life. Whereas later down the track, as you become a more mature athlete or just mature human being, you can make smaller micro changes and you notice the impact quite drastically. So I didn't notice that with paleo. The only thing I did notice was that when I cut out sugar properly, and this wasn't even paleo, this was a little bit later, when I cut out sugar like in its entirety for, I think I did like 2 weeks of absolutely no added sugar, that was the first time that I was like, I feel like I've got a hangover each day for like, it lasted like a while where I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. So that was the first time where I fully cut out sugar, and I still, you know, I include sugar in my diet. I'm not anal about it, but that was one of those things that I was like, oh, okay, I've really noticed a difference. The point that I actually really, it was impacting my performance was I'd competed at the games already. So it was around 2017 and I'd been working with a nutrition coach who, like, the goal was to improve performance. And if leaning out came with that, then fine. But I think the message that they got was she wants to lean out. And so just put me on really, really low calories. And it was like 1700 to 1900 calories. And it was nuts. I was training like twice a day. It was bad news. So I went through that for about, I think about 4 or 5 months, and had a training partner who I was like, I was just having these big roller coasters in my training days. Like, one day was amazing. The next day I was like almost in tears at the end of my session, or just like a grumpy asshole. And he's like, hey, like, I think it's the food. Like, I think you're worried about it and you're complaining about it. And I think that might be the underlying cause. And what I've actually roundabout learned is that the under eating or not having sufficient calories doesn't necessarily impact you in the ways you think it is. Like, it doesn't make you just hungry all the time. It's, you're really tired. You're generally hyper emotional. I had zero patience for anybody. And then there were some days that were really good. And it was almost like I became hyper on some days. So it was just like, I was, like I said, it was a fucking roller coaster where I just didn't feel like I had control. I was kind of like tired all the time, but wired at times. And it was a mess.
How lean did you get at this point?
So I dropped about 5 kilos, and I was like, I'm 5'8" and I sit roughly at about 75 kilos, and I dropped down to 70, in a matter of like 3 or 4 months.
I mean, it's such a small quantity of food for someone that performs multiple times per day. And I'm going to say, were you coaching at this point as well? So you're on your feet the majority of the day as well?
Pretty much. Yeah.
It's pretty scary. It is.
It's pretty fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Like, we'll go, I have a few women at the moment. We're starting to just sort of reverse out just to see where we can get to and the capability. So they may have gone down to maybe 1600 a day, and now they're up towards maybe 2.4, between 2.4, 2.6 most days. And it's, people don't understand how that's possible or how they're capable. But the biggest thing of getting them up there then is not the, like, the physical food. It's just allowing their brain to take them there and eat more food without them just fearing getting fat.
Goddamn terrified. Like, and almost like for no real reason. Like I was just like, I'm going to wake up obese tomorrow. Like it's this fear of undoing so much hard work and being so committed to one way of doing things that changing something is not only changing your behavior, but it's changing your beliefs around what you think is okay and not okay, or what's acceptable and what's right and what's wrong. So it was like, you have to overcome so many mental barriers to just start to eat like 200 or 300 extra calories, which is to me now, you know, today I'm like, that's crazy. It's fine. It's not a problem. Yeah. But back then I remember going from the 1900 to 2400 being like, and posting a photo, actually, I posted a photo that was like an ab shot. And I was like, wow, eating 2400 calories and haven't gained any weight. And just being like, that was the win to me. And I was, and you know, looking back on it, I'm like, no, the win was you were eating more food and you were fucking gaining your sanity. But to me at the time, it was like overcoming the fear of eating more food was so significant, and not gaining weight was the win. And it's, you know, it's like, man, I was gaining my health back at the time, but to me, it was just so hyper-focused on my weight that I lost that. I totally lost sight of it.
Yeah, I think that's such a massive societal problem, that fear of eating more and thinking that it will undo all your hard work. Like, there are so many people just conditioned thinking that 1,200 calories is the magic number that's needed to achieve anything. And once they start getting a little bit of results, that's where they think they need to stay. And then, yeah, like you said, over time, things just don't work as well as they should. And you're going to reach that sort of straw that broke the camel's back moment. And it sucks for some people because they don't have the tools to be able to deal with those challenges or deal with the problems when they arise.
Yeah, exactly. And it creeps up on you. You know, it's like, it's, you don't notice how shit you're feeling until you start feeling better. You know, it's like when you're sick and you don't notice like how bad it was until you're better again. And you're like, oh man, that was a rough patch. So I think people just sometimes don't realize how good they're designed to feel.
Yeah. And I think people fear gaining weight way too much. Like every little bit of pound of body fat is like the worst thing ever. It's like, it's not always. And for the majority of people, you know, if we start talking about menstrual cycles and sort of energy deficiencies, they're going to have to gain some fat back just to start living that little bit freer. Have you seen that a lot with speaking to women, or did you ever go through a problem with it where sort of you went into like on Maria, like you started losing your cycle, or never that deep?
Yeah. So I lost my cycle for 3 months, which is the definition. It has to be about 3 months, to define that as amenorrhea. But, that was right around that period. So I was eating for about, I think it had been about 4 months, and then lost my period for the last 3 months. And then it was inconsistent for a few months. And then after getting back on track with eating more food, I think it was about a month of that where it seemed to go back to being relatively consistent. And then I never went back down to below 2000 calories, and I've never been below 2000 calories since.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had that phase where that was my leanest point. I dropped a lot of weight really quickly. I was really tired. I thought I looked like fucking shredded, but I had lost my period. And that was when that was the big red flag for me. I was like, the first month you miss a period, you're like, okay, that was weird. That's kind of strange. And then suddenly I just like didn't get it. And that was when I was like, okay, something's fucking wrong. Like, this is not cool. And I think that fortunately, like it was enough to pull me into my senses of like, I'm meant to be doing this for performance. Like, this is about my health. What the hell is going on? Like, this is not helping my health at all. Like, I'm missing my period. I know there's something going wrong under the hood if I'm not even like, my reproductive system is not functioning. So yeah, that was the big like, oh shit moment.
I think it's sort of scary, and you're sort of glad you were in a performance sport at this time, so you'd start thinking like, I'm not performing as well as what I should, because there's a paper done a couple of years ago that's pretty much stated that most females would be willing to lose their menstrual cycle to get into the shape that they want to be, which is a really terrifying aspect. And obviously we own a gym, and we've spoke to women in here about some things very similar, and a lot of them would be willing to.
I don't think people understand the significance of your menstrual cycle. I think it's just a hassle. Like, I think it's kind of an inconvenient thing that happens every month, and it's just part of being a female. I don't think it's recognized as such a significant factor of your state of health. And, you know, it's been called the monthly report card by a lot of women who talk about it and deal with people who have so many issues with their hormones that they lose their period or whatever's going on. And that's what it is. It's a report card on your health. And if you're not getting it, then it's like, man, that's a hard point to start from. But yeah, you can learn so much about yourself from whatever's going on with your period, whether it's like being really heavy, being really light, being really long, if you're ovulating or not, what the symptoms are outside of that, like your skin, like your mood, like there's just so much that you can gain from it. And losing that insight is the number one biggest concern. Like that's the worst thing that can happen. And I just don't think, women have the education around that to I guess appreciate it, you know. Like it really is something that it's like, it's annoying, it's gross to a lot of people, and it's just not talked about enough.
Exactly right. I think guys on the other hand, they tend to get like a daily report, like do you wake up with a bit of morning wood?
And yeah, and that's what I talk to my male clients about. I'm like, hey, what's your sex drive like? Like, do you wake up horny? And it's like, great. They're like, cool, yeah, I can tell you everything about that. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah And again, for me, like if that happened for like went away for a week or so, I'd be like, oh shit, like either I'm sick or something's going wrong.
Hungover.
Hungover, sad. But yeah, like it we does get that daily feedback, and there is definitely a lack of education out there around for women being able to pay attention to their sort of monthly feedback. It's your body's way of letting you know how things are traveling.
REDS, you know, relative energy deficiency, doesn't just happen in women as well. I don't want to just chuck men, but it happens in men as well. You know, and there's things that you should, you know, need to look after. You know, you decrease in metabolic rate, obviously menstrual function if you're female, bone health, immunity, protein synthesis, cardiovascular health, all have these sort of significant drops. So I think men need to be careful as well of eating. And there is some simple sums you can do if you know like your fat-free mass, because I don't think you should eat, I think it's less than 45 calories per kg. Are you there?
You guys, yeah, you're back.
All right, I'm not sure what happened then. And we touched a few things. So I'm not sure where we were, but there you go. I was pretty much just saying about like fat-free mass. You know, if you know your fat-free mass, there's simple sums you can do to actually figure out how many calories your body needs as an absolute minimum requirement, especially if you are exercising. So I think sums like that can be fairly helpful. But I think people like yourself, obviously talking about menstrual cycles a little bit more is definitely going to help. We've done a podcast about the menstrual cycle. We obviously got a female on because we understand the science of it, but we'll never understand the emotion that comes. We'll never understand the emotion of it as well. It's like, oh, listen, I know what's happening. It's like, I have no fucking idea, but I can tell you the science with it. Have you ever read the book, The Woman's Book? It's called by Lyle McDonald.
I actually think I have it on my computer. I've not read it, but I have it. It's an ebook. Yeah. Is it an ebook?
It's so
yeah,
big.
Yeah. Yeah. Like pink cover. Yeah.
So when I started reading it, let's say Sean, reading it, I was like, right, let's get into this. Something's going on here that I need to sort of learn a little bit more, because nothing was mentioned at uni or through any course I've done. And I started reading it, and then I was like, I could only read like 10 pages a day, because I was like, fuck me. It was like blowing my mind. I was like, this is sad. I was like ringing my mum and my sister. I was like, I'm so sorry. I love you so much. You know, like, I'm so sorry for everything that I've done. This is terrible. I'm so sorry you have to go through this. Because like you said, you know, males change, and over the time our testosterone may drop, but women are daily. It's every day.
Yeah, I really love the idea that when we're at the beginning of our follicular phase, which is from menstruation to ovulation, or you can maybe call it just after you've stopped menstruating, we're most similar to men, because it's like that's in our very calm phase where it's like all our hormones are pretty low and like settled. And yeah, I think it's Dr. Stacey Sims who's like, yeah, you're most like men in that phase. And you're like, this is awesome. Oh my God. Like, that's amazing. You guys just have that every day.
But only for 2 weeks.
Yeah. But here's the thing. I think the degree to which women suffer with their period reflects the degree to which it's diverging from where it should naturally be. So like my period really doesn't bother me. And it's really hard because I often do talk about like, oh, fucking I train. And I regularly PB on day one of my cycle, because that's when I feel my best performance wise. And I don't think it's that I feel like I've got an increase in performance. It's that I've come out of the back end of my luteal phase, which is my high hormone phase. Once you start menstruating, everything is settled back down again. So I'm like, oh, I can fucking breathe again. Like I can perform, like I can apply force again to a degree. Like I'm coordinated again. Like my body's just moving the way that I want it to. So like day one of my period, I'm like, I feel awesome. But people will not have that same experience, because everyone will have like other shit going on, or you know, like you said, stress and losing like your morning wood. It's the same thing. Women have stress impact their period, and it's like that if you've got more PMS, if you're really moody, if you're super emotional, if you're having worse cramps, like those are all indicators that there's something like going on. Like you should have a virtually symptom-free period, and that's what I've gotten to the point where that's pretty much what I experience. So yeah,
it's really interesting you say that. We had that podcast yesterday, the Lily Riley, the, you know, squats 210 kilos, 75 kilos. And we got her on. We thought, oh, this would be a really interesting time to go talk through menstrual cycle. And we did. And she's like, yeah, I just fucking ignore it and just lift and just eat. And I was like, yeah, great. Fair cool. enough. Take that
and
one
and
off.
And that's it. Like I had, you know, I was working with a male coach for a while and he was like, hey, like I kind of just need a little advice on like how to address menstrual cycles with women. Because for my female athletes, there's a little bit of a trend right now to be like, how is your period going to impact training and how you should adjust your training around your period? And I'm like, no, like, I don't think that's actually realistic. Like, unfortunately you have to train and there are adjustments that you can yeah. make. And I 100% think that we need to take it into consideration, but I also don't think that we need to almost let our periods rule us yeah. to a degree where it's like, hey, like, you know, the powerlifter and myself, like I'm an example of someone who doesn't really change their training depending, like I'll make small minor adjustments with some of the things that I do, but otherwise it's like, you just train. Yeah. And you get over it. And I think that, and, you know, being competitive as well, it's like the psychological effect of thinking that it's going to impact you mm. is probably greater than your period impacting you, barring someone who's got some issues going on with their hormones and someone who has not taken care of themselves to the point where they have a relatively symptom-free period. Like if they've got a lot of symptoms, then there's another issue.
Yeah.
But if they're talking about your period impacting your performance, if you've optimized your hormones and your menstrual health, then your period will impact you minimally. In fact, you'll know when it can be an advantage to you. Yeah. And like, man, I don't know what it is, but like all of my competitions for the past 3 or 4 years, my biggest competitions have been the week I've had my period or the week before. Like it just fucking every time. And it's like, you learn that you're capable of so much more. And a lot of it is psychological.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, that's a really good point. I reckon a lot of people take things away from this or at least go and learn a little bit more about it. From going back through the thousands of posts you have on Instagram and looking from the, looking from the beginning, I think there's been some really constant themes. One of them being effort and resilience and just your ability to fucking show up. Has this always been like a value of yours, or is it something that's sort of progressed as you've gone through your sort of athletic endeavors?
Probably a little bit of both, to be honest. I wouldn't be able to say that it was one or the other. It's just something that has come from being around some really smart people. So one of the biggest things that impacted me as a person was actually becoming part of CrossFit seminar staff. They have a very rigorous interning process. And even when you're on staff and you actually get through that process, the feedback that we get is incessant. Like it is relentless and it's challenging. Like it's very uncomfortable. And that process on its alone has been one of the biggest things that's changed who I am, or at least had an influence on the person that I've become. So in terms of resilience and effort, it's like, you got to have resilience to get through this internship. And if you aren't putting in effort, then it's like, you can just don't even walk through the door because it's going to be a shit day for you. So yeah, those are things that I've always valued. And yeah, I actually think, funnily enough, it was never something that made sense to me as an athlete until it made sense to me as a person. Mm-hmm. And I was applying that in work and applying that with my coaching. And then when I started to actually treat myself like more of an athlete and I was becoming more competitive, I found this really nice crossover where I suddenly was able to, I guess, more physically test that theory of like, hey, effort over outcome and can you show up on the bad days and what do you do when shit gets tough?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, that's a really, really, really good answer.
go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, at what stage, like, obviously you, as you're starting this CrossFit seminar journey, you know, becoming more and more ingrained in CrossFit itself, what drove you to try and go down the competitive route? Like, what was your why behind it? What made you show up day in, day out, training twice a day, having that sort of relentless pursuit to just get better and better?
I was pretty lucky. I had a pretty good mentor. I don't know if you guys know Matt Swift, who used to own CrossFit Noosa and CrossFit Brisbane. Pretty smart human being. And so I kind of had him on my side with seminars because that's how I got connected with him. And he was one of my, he was like essentially the mentor of the mentors, you know, like he's like the grandfather
of CrossFit. He's a very honest man.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's tough and he knows his shit, and he's an incredible competitor as well, who happens to be married to one of the most excellent sports psychologists in the country. So, really nice little combination there. And he'd been helping me again previously with work stuff. So with seminars, with the gym, with being a coach, And I'd gotten to a point where we competed at the 2015 games as a team with my affiliate, CrossFit Rocks in Brisbane. And that was, it was almost accidental. We had a group of really, really amazing athletes all combined, and we competed well on the floor. Like we just, it was still a competitive like time in CrossFit, but, I think it was just the teams maybe were a little bit easier to get in. And we just happened to have like, we had like two top level national gymnasts in our team. We had someone who's now rowing, trying to go to the Olympics. Like we just had this combination of six people that were like, it worked out really well for us. So from that, I was inspired to compete more. I had a little injury that I rehabbed that. So I had a back injury in between that. And once I'd recovered from my injury and I'd gotten back to my competitive state, funnily enough, the injury was actually one of the things that taught me like, hey, you can actually push yourself to improve and overcome shit that's hard. And so I reached out to Swifty being like, hey, and this was in 2016 or 17 when we still had regionals. And I'm like, I want to go to regionals. And, you know, I was in top 200, top 100 of the open, not without trying, but just kind of like, I would sit there with my own training and I would kind of be in that group. So I wasn't too far outside of that territory of being competitive. And I sort of said, look, I want to go to regionals. Like, can you give me some advice? And he was like, okay, well, first of all, fuck regionals. You need to be trying to go to the games if you actually want to become something. And then second of all, you need a training partner. And so those two things were really significant in my life. The concept that my goal was too small and I was going to undersell myself and therefore underperform because I was just going for something that was already within reach. You know, I was like top 100. All I had to do was like top, I think it was like 30. And it was like, if I just kept doing what I was doing, I was going to get there. That was that path. But if I wanted to exceed that and I wanted to strive for more and possibly fail, I had to choose a bigger goal. And so that was when the conversation of, you have to be trying to not just fucking get to the games. You've got to be trying to fucking win the games and you got to behave like one of those athletes. Yep. And so it was like, it was a big slap around the face. And I was like, oh shit. Oh man. Like if I want to do this, I got to take this seriously. And so I just applied myself as if I was a games athlete. And then the second thing that happened was the training partner, he became my training partner for a year. So that was probably the coolest thing ever. So I would drive to CrossFit Brisbane every day and we would train for a few hours and I would get Swifty time. Yeah. He would like fill my brain. And then I was working with his wife, Wendy, as well. And then 2 years later was when I qualified for, I think it was sanctionals at the time. And then I ended up changing to team to compete with Rob Forte's team. And then that was when we went to the games in 2019. So yeah, so it kind of worked out pretty well right before, you know, things like COVID hit, which is good, like good year to finish competing, at least that phase of my competition life. But yeah, so I think that was kind of what pushed me to be competitive. It was like somebody who was telling me, hey, your competitive goals are great, but they're not great enough. And if you want to be competitive, then fucking take yourself seriously and try to actually be the best because the best version of yourself exists where the best athletes and the best people in the world are. So if you want to find your best self, then go and try and be the best ever.
Yeah. It's a pretty hard mindset for people to wrap their head around though. I mean, it's
I think you have to be willing to really fuck up. Like, and that was that was one of the hardest parts, right? Where it's like, if you want to be competitive, you're going to have thoughts of like, I mean, I might not make it. Like, I mean, I'm not that good. Like, I'm not, what about those guys who they have incredible engines. Their metabolic fitness is just beyond what mine will ever be. And it's like, those thoughts will come and go and they just do. And you have to let them flow in and flow out just as quickly and focus on like, hey, the big goal drives you. It has to. And if you, I think the fear of being mediocre was scarier than the fear of failing for me at that point. I think that's where I got to. And I really enjoyed training with Swifty. So I had this really nice combination of, I didn't want to just be average. I knew that I was capable of more. I knew I had potential. And so this was just about me realizing as much potential as I could, like just getting it, squeezing as much out as I could. And then the other part was just fucking enjoying it, having fun. And he taught me to race, which is really cool. So we had this leaderboard and it was like, it just became infamous. We had this leaderboard, it was a whiteboard in the gym and we would tally up every single workout that we did. Every single day, someone would get a point. And for an entire year, we had this leaderboard and we'd like get ahead of each other and someone would fall behind. We were matched really nicely. Like he was a master's male athlete. I was an open female athlete. So we just matched in terms of like the weights and our level of fitness. So we would race all the time and it was awesome. So it was enjoyable. It pushed me to like learn how to be next to someone and be like, I'm going to fuck you up and have fun in the process. And then sometimes I'd get fucked up and I'd have to sit there and be like, God damn it, I lost and have to deal with that. And yeah, it was a really, really cool year.
I've been following you for a while, and as have many other people. And one thing that, you know, even speaking to you now, it's clear you're not afraid of hard work. But for people to excel to the level of athleticism that you have, there must have been plenty of other rocks that you uncovered. You spoke about working with a sort of sports psychologist in Wendy, but what were some other things that you did to sort of optimize your health and performance?
Yeah, I think assuming the identity was a big thing for me. So it meant that my sleep routine suddenly became very different. My social life changed a little bit. Even the number of seminars that I was doing changed quite drastically, because that took me on a flight somewhere in Australia or New Zealand or Asia most weekends. So I dropped down the number of seminars that I was doing. I even dropped down the hours of coaching that I was doing. And at the end of that year, I stopped coaching full time. That was the last time I coached full time. So I just really dedicated a lot of my time to just being an athlete and just enjoying that. And I was fortunate where I was like financially stable and set up to just do that. So yeah, I guess it was like sometimes the one percenters are the things that maybe not necessarily are the ticket to getting you over the line to becoming a competitive athlete. But if you have the mindset that those are really valuable things, then you apply yourself in every area of your life. Because if you think that the time that you go to bed is just as important as the training that you're doing, or the meal prep, or the like number of times a year you go out and drink with your mates and stay up all night, like if every little thing is important and you apply yourself to everything, then you reap the benefits of that eventually. Like the hard work pays off eventually. So yeah, I think a lot of it was really just a mindset thing. Like if anything, if you start with the right mindset, it makes the work a lot easier.
Yeah, that's it.
I think as soon as you start to see people have identity changes, be that with their weight or performance, things start to happen a hell of a lot.
Yeah, that's it, right? Like behavior change has to be identity change. Like you can't be who you are getting the results you're currently getting that you're not satisfied with and then try and get different results. You have to be the person that gets those results. So assuming the identity was a really big thing for me. And I remember reading in a book somewhere, or somebody had, I don't know, posted it on social media, that was like talking about the same thing, but with weight loss. It was like, think about the leanest person that you know and make the same decisions that they make. And just assume their identity. Think about the leanest, strongest, like the most badass person that you know, do what they do. And like, look, that's not flawless, but I think it's a nice guide in terms of what it means to take on a new identity in order to change your results. And results are not just that superficial level of like, oh, my behavior will just change and I'll get those results. It's like, no, who you perceive yourself to be and the things that person does is the bigger determinant of what you get.
Then on top of that, you've probably then got environment with that as well. You know, you become an elite athlete, you just start hanging around with other elite athletes and you start eating together, performing together.
Environment's super helpful. It goes both ways. It's like, not only do you tend to put yourself in a better environment, but if you do find a better environment, that will only influence you in a better way. Like I eventually moved to CrossFit Frankston, which is in where I am now in Melbourne. Yeah. And that was another level up. Like I was training with Swifty, which was awesome. We were racing and I loved that. Then when I was put into the pool of like Jay Crouch and Rob Forte and their whole competitive team, which like their whole gym is a competitive team. Like it's nuts. So it's like suddenly I was in this environment where it wasn't just me and Matt. It was the entire gym were there to be the best that they could possibly be on that day. And they showed up every day, no matter what, like their consistency. Like if Rob Forte does anything well, he's goddamn consistent. Like I've never seen that guy miss a day in the gym, except for like, I think maybe once or twice when he was working on a warehouse somewhere doing construction for like 10 hours a day. So those are the only times I think he's missed a day.
It's amazing what, you know, how things change in your life when you start identifying as the person you want to be. Like, you know, Kate Gordon, the CrossFit athlete, to be that person, it's easy when you ask yourself like, okay, if I want to be a CrossFit athlete, do I need to prioritize my sleep? Yes. Do I need to prioritize my nutrition? Do I need to seek discomfort in my training? Yes. And again, same. So I think John Berardi speaks about it so much when it comes to nutrition and behavior change there. Like what does a happy, healthy person do in regards to their sleep, their choosing desserts and whatnot? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But yeah, that identity change is a massive one.
Yeah, it becomes your why, right? Like it becomes the why. And I think that the why thing confuses a lot of people. Like it still confuses me. Yeah. And like people are like, okay, well, what's your why? And connect really deeply with that. And that will motivate you. And it's like, I don't know, where do I find my why? Like, what do I need to find deeper meaning in something? Like, how the fuck do I find that? But I think it's when you realize that you choose your purpose, like you get to decide what your purpose in life is. You don't go and find it. It doesn't come and find you. You don't have to find deep meaning in something. You just have to decide what it is that you really want. And that becomes the why. And that can drive everything that you do, you know, like you said, it drives all of the behaviors to help you accomplish that thing. And that can become the why.
It's a lot more fulfilling when you're identifying, living with the, with your values. You feel like a sense of purpose in what you do.
Exactly. It's like, I think the purpose thing is so important. And the idea that you can choose your purpose is even more powerful. And like, you know, people's purposes change and people can have multiple purposes in their life. But for me now, and even at the beginning, when I was talking to Wendy, Matt's partner, a lot of it with regards to the why was I wanted to be the best version of myself beyond just the games though. So beyond just being a competitive athlete, I also want to be a really, really healthy, like just strong human being that can take on difficult things. So the way that I behaved became a reflection of that. And so my why was about who am I as a person and what kind of things can I tolerate in my life? And beyond that, what does my health look like in 50 years from now? And what can I do today to improve that? So those things became the guiding or the Northern Star to a degree.
Yeah, and then just having that ability though, because those things are like compounding. You just have that discipline just to fucking show up, you know, just to show up each day. And like we spoke about before, just laying that brick, just keep laying those bricks just day after day after day. And eventually you'll have this fucking wall.
Yeah. It's funny. The training becomes the easy bit. Like weirdly enough, the training and the doing the meal prep, like I'm not going to say it's easy, like in terms of like, oh, it's just a dream. And I just like, it was just so breezed through it. But I think the thing that becomes the hardest part is maintaining your psychology and staying top of your mindset. And that's when you can do the work on your mindset, that becomes the real work. And then the training and stuff is just this byproduct of like you trying to prove this why and this purpose that you've chosen. So it's like you almost have to do the work upstairs.
Yeah.
And then the work outside of that just kind of not necessarily just happens, but to a degree, yeah, that suddenly doesn't become the hard work anymore. That's the stuff that you just do it because that's who you are.
I guess the next big question is, have you finished competing?
That's a question I ask myself. obviously, things going on in the world right now is impacting that. At the moment, I might be competing unaffiliated. I'm really enjoying CrossFit again. I was getting into triathlons for a little while, and I'm really liking getting back into the gym. And maybe it's because I have a shiny new sparkly garage gym, and then I'm like, ooh, toys. But I'm really liking that. I tend to train better with other people. So like that could be a factor of training unaffiliated. But I'm going to see what happens. Like I've still got a few years in me of like giving it a good nudge. So it could mean I take a couple of years to get back up to where I was. And that might extend depending on the situation. But yeah, I think it's not over till it's over. And I haven't like officially hung up my shoes yet, but I'm just unsure as to like what that path looks like.
Even
but,
if you did, right, that 111 kilo clean and jerk in the Torian Pro this year, that video is just fucking phenomenal, isn't it? It's like, it's such...
It's probably the coolest moment of my entire like CrossFit career.
It's epic. Just everything from like the crowd to just you taking in to just being like, let's go. And then
it was a highlight for sure.
It was a phenomenal. Let's go into, I think I wrote like the importance of sport maybe for female sport. Obviously you start a little bit later, or the importance of finding something that is more performance based over aesthetic based, for males and females, but I'll say more so females from a stereotypical point of view. You know, we've got to speak to a hell of a lot of athletes out there that on this podcast, and they're all different shapes and sizes depending on what their sport needs. And I just think it's such an important thing for young kids, preferably, to get into.
Yeah, look, for me, my value and my worth as a human being was something that depended on probably what I look like more than anything else. So when I got into a sport, and this used to happen in the other sports and when I was dancing as well, but when I applied myself to some kind of physical endeavor, my value and my worth became more than just what my body looked like. It became that my body was not in fact an ornament, it was an instrument. And so suddenly what you could accomplish physically allowed me to see myself in a different light. So I think your perspective of yourself changes. And like I said before, you know, improving as a human is what helped me improve as an athlete. And it's the same thing here. It's like when you become a physical human that can accomplish physical things that you perhaps couldn't once do, like, you know, when you start learning to do things like a strict pull-up, or you squat 100 kilos for the first time, or whatever it may be, suddenly who you are as a human, it kind of expands. And suddenly it's like, hey, I'm someone who accomplishes things. And hey, like, I'm someone who likes a challenge, and I like to push myself, and I'm consistent in my training, and the language and the way that you talk about yourself shifts. So there was a really big change for me with, like I said before, when I got into CrossFit, of like, oh, like, this is really fun because I get to focus on trying to drive my performance rather than trying to drive the number on the scale down and control my food. And what happened as a byproduct of driving my performance up is my food controlled itself, because I ate what helped me feel good in training. And I do that to this day now. It's like, I could go out and eat a pizza, and I would love to do that because I fucking love pizza every single night, but I would feel like balls. Yeah. Like, I would just feel so bad. Yeah. And it would impact my training so negatively that it's not worth it. And it's the same thing with alcohol. I'm pretty outspoken about alcohol. I still drink alcohol. Like, I don't just not drink alcohol, but I pick my moments because it has such a severe impact on me and how I feel, that it's just not worth it. Like, it doesn't make sense, you know? And then the long-term implications on your health is just outrageous. So yeah, I think it's one of those things where your worth and your value as a person is so much more than the fucking body that you were given at birth. And I don't think a lot of women can move beyond that until they've done something physical with it.
I think it's hard for some people to realize unless they've been in that situation, though. It's good for us to say it and say, no, this is how you're going to feel if you get this lean. But unless you've actually been there, I'm going to say we've all been there, where I've been to a place where I'm so lean, like, I look in the mirror and I'm like, you're all right, mate. You're all right. And then, but my stress is through the roof. Business is probably lacking, my sex drive's dead, and I'm just hanging on to this thing of, yeah, but you look good. You look all right, mate. Keep going. You know what I mean? And then you start eating more, and then you're just like, what the fuck was I doing? But your body's so good at going into homeostasis and believing that is normality. Just this line, like, this is how I should feel.
I love, I don't know if you guys remember from the CrossFit Level 1, the sickness, wellness, fitness continuum, because it basically says, hey, you can take any objective measurement of anything that you do. So it could be something like body fat. If that's the goal, then, like, hey, you want to drive your body fat towards what's considered fit. Like, the values of all these things that you measure will sit somewhere on this continuum. But if you've got things like your triglycerides or your cholesterol towards the sick end of the continuum, then it pulls your average down. Like, it kind of ruins where you feel like you are. So when you take in the context of your health and you consider things beyond just what impacts your body composition, then suddenly I think you get a different perspective on where you're currently at. And just like you said, it's like stress impacts that, your lifestyle impacts that. So it's like, hey, you might have one thing sitting over towards the fit end of the continuum, but if you've got other stuff like your menstrual cycle missing and you're over at sick for that, then suddenly you're actually not where you think you are when you take in the full picture. So I really like that. And I love that it also considers your performance markers. So it's like, for a deadlift, for example, you know, we've got people that we know in the world that can deadlift crazy amounts, but they're also massive people that are like, you know, like, they're probably not the healthiest.
Yeah.
Well, actually, hey, I probably couldn't even say that, but I know that one of their markers in terms of body fat would be extremely high and be towards the sick end of the continuum. Let's go and have a look at their bone density. Let's have a look at their triglycerides. Let's have a look at their resting heart rate. Let's look at their blood pressure. You know, it's like, let's look at all the measurements and look at everything else. Let's look at their 1 mile run, because a lot of those guys probably can't run. And then it's the opposite for, you know, the endurance athletes, where it's like, hey, a lot of those guys drop dead from a stroke or cardiac arrest because they're so unhealthy, even though they're so aerobically fit, but they've got other markers going the wrong direction. So it's like, when you take in the context, you get a very different picture of what's going on. And it's like, people get hung up on how they look, but if you can have a look at everything going on in your life, from the amount that you're lifting, the speed that you're running, your performance in terms of, like, just general workouts in the gym that you can measure, your other measurements that you'd get from the doctor, things like your period, things like your morning wood. It's like all of these things can fall on the spectrum. And what you're trying to do is get all of them towards fit. That's the important thing. It's not just one. You want to try and get all of them towards fit. And if you've got things sliding the other way, then we've got a problem.
I think that's quite exciting, especially for the general population, because they can actually do that and achieve that a lot easier than some elite athletes like your strongmen, like your Iptogis, you know what I mean? Yeah. They have to, their that job is just to perform at the highest level for their sport, which isn't always the healthiest. Like you just said.
Yes, yes, look, accurate. Yes, absolutely.
You look at Eddie Hall, who won World's Strongest Man in 2017. He was quite short, first man to deadlift 500 kilos. But he won it that year and retired that same night because he was like, he will die before, you know, he needs to win. You know what I mean? So he retired straight away. And he's like, if I carried on for another 12 months, like I would be dead. I was that unhealthy.
And that's why, like at the crux of it, you know, obviously people take the extremes of any advice given to them. But at the base level with CrossFit, that's why it's so many people sort of clung to it, because it is just about developing that sort of average level of ability at everything and just being about being a better functioning human. Obviously people got too hung up on like just the gym stuff and they neglected a lot of the other stuff. But I think a lot of gyms, and again, not to toot our own horn, but like our gym sort of bases ourselves around that sort of holistic strength and conditioning, like encompassing not just the training side of things, but everything. And I think there are more and more people having these conversations. And I think that there will be a shift in the health and fitness industry, over time with that sort of focus, which sort of leads me to ask you the question, what do you think, or where do you see the future of the health and fitness industry going?
I don't know where I see it going, but what I would love to see is more of what you guys are doing, right? Like, I mean, CrossFit is something that I have believed in for eight years. Oh God, no, more like 10 years now, far out. I'm losing my timeline. And it's something that I'll always believe in, because it gets the results that we are looking for. And the results that we are looking for is that you have fitness throughout your lifetime, which creates this buffer or this hedge against chronic disease. And that's very, like, you know, if you want to go and read some articles by Greg Glassman, it's like you can read on all of that kind of stuff, talking about like CrossFit being the cure. But to a degree, it's like, yeah, your fitness in terms of when your fitness takes in consideration your entire lifestyle, that determines your quality of life. And that should terrify everybody, yeah. Terrify everybody who's making decisions that means that they are kind of messing up with their future. So perhaps what I would say to answer that question is not what does the future of the fitness industry look like, but what does the future of the people in this world look like? Mm. And there's a couple of different options. The path of least resistance is doing the easy thing. There's people who go out and drink and don't really work on their fitness and you know, maybe have small attempts every now and again, but are pretty inconsistent. And other people that in the future, like, it's not going to be the brightest future for them. They're going to be the ones that are at risk of having a shitty time and having to rely on other people to support them because they can't stand up off the couch or they can't carry the groceries. It's the simple things, right? It's like my goal and the best path, the best version of anybody's future is to not be put in a retirement home and to always be able to wipe your own fucking ass getting off the toilet. Like, if I can't get myself off the toilet, like, that's going to be a really bad day for me. I just want to be able to do an air squat for the rest of my life. Mm. And right now, by maxing out my potential as an athlete, by being able to do things like back squat heavy and snatch and run and box jump, that is going to set me up for a much greater success to ensure that I can always do that air squat later on in life.
Yeah.
So I guess it's like, I don't know where the industry is headed, but I hope that enough people start to realize that they can reverse, or maybe not reverse, but they have control of their future, and hopefully we figure it out before it's too late.
Clip that, Kate.
It's a good answer. I would love to see sort of the, I'll just write it down, like the metrics per performance change. Like, I think CrossFit or strength gyms do a really good thing where they're chasing performance. They're chasing an extra kilo. They're not chasing this heart rate, which is going to lead to the maximum amount of calories you can burn. Like, there's nothing that blows my mind more than people going to the gym just to burn calories. But more gyms are popping up with those metrics.
It's like the Whoop straps, right? Hopefully that technology takes off, and I'm sure Apple will buy it one day and everyone will have some kind of health.
It'll just
tracker.
Be injected into you, right? Like, it'll be a chip that's just implanted at some point in the future.
The Whoop annoyed me though after a while, because say if I was just doing an ollie session or just doing lifting. Like I wasn't doing any conditioning. My strain would be
no strain.
Strain would be like a fucking two. I'd be like,
my strain for like CrossFit is like a 10 to a 12, maybe a 14 on a good day. I go out for like a 20 minute run and it's like 20 strain for the day. And I'm like, fuck, I was just cruising for 20 minutes. Jesus. Yeah.
So there has to be something there.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think it's really funny. The measuring of performance, something that I would love to see more in gyms is I see this big trend of people pushing away from like the RX thing and like being like, no, we don't have RX. And I think it's the same concept of like, you know, everybody gets a participation trophy for kids in school and you're like, what the fuck, man? But there are going to be winners and losers. That is the reality of life. So fucking recognize the winners and then tell the losers that they get another shot another time. And if they work hard, they can maybe be a winner. You know, it's like, I think that there's value in having a bar that's set high that not everyone can get to. I think that's really important. And I think that the issue with people being like, we don't want to do RX and it's too hard is because they're missing or they're not able to bridge the gap between like talking to their clients about the culture of that and what that actually means. So too many people come into the gym going, this is an attack on my ego and I feel like shit because I can't RX. And it's like, well, hey, and not everybody should be able to RX on day one. That is the point. You've got to be able to go through a process that marks progress, and you don't get to make progress on the first day that you step in the door. So RX is valuable, and having multiple levels that you strive towards getting to is good. And some people aren't going to get there, and that's okay. It's still important that we show up. So I think it's almost like there's too much importance placed on RX and not enough importance placed on the actual showing up and consistency thing. But there's also a lack of like understanding that we got to set the bar high, because if we don't, then everybody's getting a participation award. And it's like, what are we really accomplishing?
We've had many of conversation over the last couple of years about RX.
It's a really tough subject.
We've been through different stages. I suppose we have a lot of workouts that we have RX on, and we have some that we don't, but not with the objective of making people feel like they can't get there. It's the fact that some people could go heavier than what RX is. Some people could go more. It's like, what stimulus are we trying to get out of this workout today? Can we hit that right stimulus? You know, sometimes it's like, well, I can't hit RX. What can you hit? It's like, well, what can you hit? You know, or someone say if you put the RX at 60, but someone would need to be at 80 or 90 to maybe get that same benefit. So we just sort of try and explain the stimulus a lot more within a session, you know, so I think.
Yeah. And even understanding like how to measure your progress as well. Like I think people get so hung up on RX and it's like, okay, so you did, let's use the workout Fran as an example. You did Fran with an empty barbell and ring rows the first time you did it. Cool. So you're going to do that same thing again, 6 months down the track, and we're going to see what your time is. And they're like, yeah, so I PB'd by like 5 minutes. And you're like, holy shit, dude, that's insane. And they're like, yeah, but it's not RX. Yeah, you're like, buddy, whoa. Yeah. You've made incredible progress. And I think that that's one of the things that perhaps is missed. It's like, the RX thing is important, but it's also not the only thing. And if we can place importance on other things and learn how to measure our progress properly and accurately relative to each individual, then suddenly it's like the importance should be on what's your progress looking like. Like you said, what are you lifting?
Yeah, I really think you have to be objective. Something that we try and push here to be as objective as we can. We use Wodify here. I know a lot of gyms still use whiteboards, and we're just like, I'm just like, come on, let's at least do something, or get your members to download some sort of app so they can track some level of progress. So just, you know, just to take away this
I used to love guesswork. Walking into gyms where you'd see like a bookshelf with everyone's training journal. And when you signed up, you just got a training journal and you had to write down your benchmarks. I'm like, look, if you don't want to write down every day, fine. Just write down the days that we have benchmarks that are going to be repeated so that you know what you're lifting and you know what your time Fran is.
Yeah, we used to do, well, back in the, I think I opened our affiliate back in 2013. One of the first things we had was just a little box in the corner with a bunch of like mini little notepads. But then we'd have no pens.
Everyone's like using scraps of chalk.
So just talk, obviously coming towards the end now, obviously you had a pretty severe back injury. Can you just talk us through that?
Yeah. So it was one of those injuries that just kind of crept up on me. I have degenerative disc disease. My dad has it as well. Like, I don't know if it's, I'm not going to argue if it's like genetic or hereditary, but like I have a shit back. Most people do. It's not uncommon for someone to have like a bulged disc or herniated disc and not even know about it. So it's funny because I had an MRI done and, you know, they pointed out a slight bulge and some degeneration of like the facet joints, which are the backside of the spine. And it was like, has that always been there? Yeah. We don't actually know. Has it just been inflamed or aggravated from like, I was doing a lot of traveling at the time and actually doing a lot of competing at the time as well. So it was a bit of a perfect storm. But the issue that I had was I would take like the 4 to 6 weeks of like doing very minimal weightlifting and just kind of like basic movements that I knew wouldn't upset it. And really dialing back my training to focus mostly on just like, I'm just going to rest. I'm just going to do what my physio told me and I'll just rest. And then I'd get back into training and I'd slowly ease into things and get, you know, rebuild my confidence. And then about week 10 or 12, I'd do it again. And I'd be doing some random movement and it's always one rep, right? Like it always takes one rep.
It's always the last rep.
I say that to all my clients now who are like, oh, I'm just going to see how it goes. And I'm like, no, don't fucking see how it goes. Cause it will be one rep and you'll be out. So, that happened to me 3 times after doing it initially. And I was like, okay, I got to figure this thing out. And so I just kind of changed my approach and essentially treated myself like I was starting every single day was a bad day. Like what I'd been doing prior is I'd been going, okay, well, if I feel good today, I'll just push hard. And then on the days I feel bad, I just won't push at all. And so the problem with that is I wound up fucking it up again. So I ended up treating every day like a bad day and started with an empty barbell and progressively over 3 months built back up to probably around 70 or 80% of what I'd been doing prior. And it took a really long time. And it forced me to be incredibly consistent and apply myself and figure out how to, again, kind of enjoy the process of training as well. Cause you stop enjoying it when you're injured. It's like, you can get really bummed out. Yeah. And so I gave myself a new goal of doing some gymnastics stuff where I essentially built up from I built towards a press to handstand. So that was like my new little party trick of like, okay, I'm just going to learn this thing. Cause I can do strict handstands and strict like core work. Like I can do that stuff. That was something that, I guess when you talk about resiliency, like that really tested my resiliency for sure. And I think there were a lot of times there where I reflect back and I go, would I have stopped CrossFit? Like, if I weren't coaching at a gym, would I have stopped CrossFit? And I don't know. Like I like to think I'm not the kind of person that would have just stopped. I would have seen it out to the end. But I think I see a lot of people now who've had a few ups and downs with niggles or like re-injured themselves a couple times and then they just get over it and then they stop. And I'm so glad that I didn't, because when I fixed my shit and I fixed the positions and I ultimately, you know, I'm sure you guys have experienced, it's like someone's got a back problem and they keep on hurting themselves. It's like, okay, buddy, like we got to figure out your position. It's like whatever else you're doing doesn't matter. Like it's your position of your squat. It's the position of the deadlift setup that you've got. It's the hyperextending in the kit that you're doing, whatever it may be. It's like, we need to address those things and work from the ground up again. So once I got through that and got through all the really shitty parts of like having to relearn how to fucking kip, like I just competed at the CrossFit Games for the first time. And I was like, I'm relearning how to kip right now. Yeah, and I'm doing like a hanging knee raise. It was just like, okay, like this is it. And I settled into that process and coming out the other end and being spat out where I was competing again. I competed at Torium Pro, which was in its kind of early days, still in the gym at that time. And that was like, that was a really cool moment for me of just being like, fuck, like I got through it. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you had better movement coming back after the injury the second time? I've taken everything back to baseline again. Did you feel like you were much better?
So it's funny. Like I'm an athlete that's just efficient. Like I'm just a really efficient mover. Like I've been demonstrating movement on seminar stuff for like years. I've retrained all of the movements that were shitty. I've still got a couple of things that aren't great. Like my squat position is still a little immature. I've got really tight ankles and I've got an old sprained ankle, like a few things that I'm hyper aware of, but man, like even on my least fit day, I will be so efficient that I will out efficient a really good athlete. Even when I'm in my least fit state, purely because like I can barbell cycle really well. I can my gymnastics is really, really smooth. Like I know how to move extremely efficiently. I'm really, really tight. I'm really particular with my movement. And like, it's almost like a joke for me. I'm like, I'm not actually that fit. I'm just really efficient. Like give me a barbell. And like, I love barbell stuff because you can really, really express that, like that, technicality.
Mm. That's an awesome. Great answer. So obviously Instagram, you're
superstar,
getting bigger on Instagram. I think you're taking the world. Even like some people from the UK I was speaking to the other day, like, oh my God, I love her. And you see the people, like your posts will always come up on, because I'm for like this nutritionist sort of evidence-based nutrition crowd, and then your posts just keep appearing. How's this feeling? Obviously it's not a new thing. You're not an overnight success in any way, shape or form. You've been posting since 2013 consistently.
It's funny that the account started because I was doing a lot of CrossFit posts on. I have a personal page. Like I have a page that's not a CrossFit page that I was posting a ton of CrossFit stuff on. And I was like, oh, I was cringing because I was like, I don't want to be that person that fucking posts all the CrossFit stuff. So I was like, I'm just going to start a secret page, like a separate page, you know, in 2013, like people weren't, it's like on Instagram, you could only post funny photos with like, everybody put way too many filters on them, you know? So I just started the CFK page and like didn't tell anyone about it. And then eventually all my friends opted in. So I was like, okay, well, you motherfuckers chose this. Yeah. Okay. So now you have to see it. So, it just grew. Like, and I think funnily enough, I was doing a lot of posting that was, probably more self-indulgent than anything for a long time up until the last couple of years. And then I started posting about my experience doing things. So like overcoming the back injury, I was doing a lot of posts around, I was just doing a passive squat, like just sitting in the bottom of the squat. I built up to 10 minutes. That was part of my recovery. And I posted a lot of that stuff and people were like, oh, this is really interesting. I'm getting value out of this. And then I started sharing about, I had adult acne when I hit like 28, like my hormones shifted and my fucking skin just broke out. And so I posted a lot about that. And then I started talking about binge eating in my history and like people started resonating with me more and more. And the more that I shared and the more that I started speaking about like, you know, the stuff that you don't just talk to everybody about, the more that the platform actually began to grow. And then the second shift or change in the growth, I guess, of my social media was when I started to coach via social media. So when I started to talk about like nutrition stuff in terms of like what I had to tell my clients, I was starting to put on social media. And then with coaching, what I teach people in class, I'd put it on social media. And I think that's when it just started to exponentially kind of expand.
Yeah. You just start answering the questions that you get every single day anyway. Do you know what I mean? So you start to show value.
Yeah.
And then I think
it's like, you just need a camera following you guys around in the gym. And it's like, suddenly you can be social media famous, you know? That's
it. And I think your openness is something that everyone is sort of driven towards. You know, you do speak about a lot of topics that people don't speak about. But as soon as you hear one person talking about it or it becoming normal, you would have had it. Everyone's just like, hey, this, I fucking do this too. Hey, I fucking do this.
I've covered a lot of topics. It's just gotten to the point where I'm just like, I am an oversharer. If you follow me, like you're going to learn a lot about me. So for the first time, I had someone come up to me in the supermarket and they're like, Kate. And I was like, hi, like you look familiar. Do I know you? And he was like, no, I follow you on social media. Can I get a photo? And I was like, this is the weirdest thing. So but I'm like, you know so much about me. Oh my God.
it's your page.
So much about me. Like if I'm out with my partner, Greg, who's MDM, people are like, oh my God, you're MDM. And I'm like, oh dear. Oh man.
I like the fact they don't even call him by his name now. They know who he is. They just still
call
MDM.
Him. Like, yeah.
Why not? All right. Finishing question.
You ready?
I think we sent it yesterday. But what does it mean to you to be healthy?
Ah, such a big question.
Such a broad question. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested in telling you.
So it's funny because I think, you know, healthy, what it means to be healthy for me, if I were to give you the objective things that I measure, it's things like my mood, things like my, like how my body feels in terms of actual recovery. Like at the moment I'm getting back into CrossFit, I'm like, I'm so sore. Like I'm so, so sore at the moment. It's things like my menstrual cycle, my skin, how well I'm sleeping, like the quality of sleep that I'm getting, if I'm stressed and if that's impacting me or not. So I think healthy for me is actually, it boils down to like the basics for one, like the basics of like food, sleep, stress, training, and as objective as I can get. And I'm pretty good at that now because I've been observing myself for a while and making notes and learning about it for a long time. So I think if you'd asked me this maybe like 6 or 7 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to give you this answer. I'd have been like, oh, if you're healthy, then you're happy and you train. But I think healthy for me is very much like I can put a number on it and it's objective and I measure it almost every day. And I'll make adjustments to my lifestyle to keep the measurements or the data points where I want them to be.
Awesome answer. Maybe give yourself a little plug. What have you got coming up? Where can people find you?
So I'm branching out into like ebooks at the moment. So talking about the back injury, that's actually the first ebook that I put out. And it's a program that I wrote for myself and that I started giving to people because people were asking me what I was doing. And so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna make it into an ebook. So that's been translated into an ebook, which will eventually be an online course. So like next year, what I'm trying to do is just basically give out the information that people ask me for all the time and create courses and ebooks on it. So that ebook's out. I've got nutrition coaching and CrossFit programming for people that are training at gyms or at home. So there's kind of a ton of stuff, but if you go to CF Kate, like you will be able to find all the things. CF Kate, my Instagram or cfkate.com.
All right. Awesome. Thank you very much for joining us. We're very excited. And I think,
especially, you know, you've got so much going on. Very busy lady. Thanks for taking the time on a Friday.
Not that busy.
the beauty of the online space.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Kate. Thank you, Kate.